How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing super. How about yourself, William?
Not too bad, not too bad.
I like your backdrop.
Oh yeah, thank you.
Looks
PR
like you.
team just supplied it, so
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic.
I
I was going for I'm stuck in the bunker. Please
like
send
it.
Reaper. I need help.
There you go. Yeah,
He's like
that's a heavy column you have behind you there.
the Wi-Fi shit. I need help, seriously. Well, hey, so good to be speaking with you. Love the movie. I have to know. I know this was adapted from a lost Dr. Seuss book. It's what Delta Force read to their little kids, Land of Bad, right?
Yep, there you go.
Okay. So,
Yeah,
no.
very, very lost Dr. Seuss book.
We're going after a CIA asset that's been captured. Is this your first mission in theater, JTAC?
Second.
Do me a favor. Keep up. The last thing we need in this op is have to save your ass.
The hell are these guys?
Local militia.
Yo, hand over in five.
I'm ready. I am your eyes in the sky and the bringer of doom.
Subtle. I got movement.
We got a situation.
Well, this is you reuniting with David Figurio. Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, Frigerio. We call him Frig.
Frigerio. Oh, very nice, very nice. So I have to know, do you just love, is this the version of the Hunger Games that you want to see? You're like, did you not see Liam Hemsworth kicking enough ass?
No, I yeah, we just honestly, to tell you the truth, this was born. We wrote this film when we were making the movie The Signal a million years ago. That was like my first real-ish film, I guess you could say. And yeah, it was such a quirky film while we were shooting it. We were like sort of scared that what do we follow it with? And at that point in my career, it was like you had to write whatever you're going to make. So we're making, I remember I was coming home like late one night after shooting. I was just thinking, like, this film's too crazy. Like, I won't be able to get another film after this. That's always your fear as a filmmaker, you know? And so, yeah, we started writing Land of Bad in a coffee shop, like, on the weekends. Because at that time, like, this was, like, 15 years ago, drone warfare was sort of becoming newer. Reapers, these, you know, crazy drones way up in the sky were, you know, all over the place. And so we thought, oh, what an interesting, you know, story, like, telling the story of that drone operator communicating with a you know, special operative on the ground. And you know, at the time, then a bunch of movies kind of came out about the same thing, so we were like, ah, okay, I guess it's been done. So we shelved it, and then all these years later I realized like the film didn't really need to be about the psychological aspect of a drone operator being disconnected from the battlefield. That can be a part of it, but it really is more about the relationship. I thought, man, wouldn't it be more interesting if we're just talking about the relationship between these two guys in a really high stress environment? And so we ended up going back and rewriting the film. We ended up getting some, you know, made some cool changes. And yeah, I had been doing on a previous project with Russell. And we decided to just send it to him and see if he was interested. And yeah, he was like, wow, this is pretty cool. And I'm pretty busy right now, but let me see what we can do. And then he said, just send the script to me. It sounds interesting. And then, yeah, he called me the next day. He's like, all right, this is cool. Let's do it. So
it's got to be good fun when Russell says, yeah, I'm in. Whatever you want to do. Just put me in the chair. Give me a golf
very
glove.
Cool, man. Such an honor to work with him. And he's such a, he like commits so wholly. It's ridiculous. It's unbelievable.
Well, you know, I look at this through the lens of something like Tom Clancy, where he did all his research to make the books feel extremely accurate. And so when you're talking about drone warfare, and what was the delta between a little bit of fiction, a little bit of fact? How did you walk that line? And the same thing for working with the soldiers.
Yeah. I mean, look, we had a lot of advisors. Kinney's named after a real JTAG instructor named Kinney. Not a true story or anything like that, but real situations. And we spent weeks out with Kenny at Fort Irwin, training with him, calling, like talking to F-35s, blowing stuff up. It was insane. It was so wild. So we got the real look at them. And then we ended up meeting with real drone operators from Creech. And we even had both of those guys on set while we were shooting. Kenny, we'd been talking to for 15 years, as long as we've been writing the script. So we always had a ton of real, you know, actual, here's how this would happen situationally, here's how you would do it. And then we had a lot of training, like gun training stuff, of course, all that fun stuff that everyone does with real SAS guys, retired SAS guys out in Australia. You know, and that's usually like, in our case, it was like a 3-week boot camp type of thing, making sure that, you know, just the simple things like movements and loading and all those things that those operators really do was real. That said, you still constantly like tweak this and this and that just to give whatever that little Hollywood part is. Like, for instance, in the case of the drone room, for me, that drone room is unbelievably real. The only unreal thing is I put windows in it to other drone rooms, which, you know, just to increase the depth, and would normally those would definitely be black walls. So you always take like some little Hollywood things just to help a camera or help a visual. Our explosion guy kept getting bigger and bigger with his explosions, like to a crazy level where I was like, whoa, I think that explosion was too big. We might need to dial that back, you know? That's just par for the course. So.
Well, I have to say there's some elements in the movie that felt so, so genuine. You know, a lot of times people see quick edits or slow motion, but there's like at the beginning of Underwater where Kristen Stewart kind of is thrown upside down in the collapse. And there's a part towards the end of the movie where Liam, it's slow motion, but it's like, it's so well timed and placed. So what were some of the discussions to say, hey, we want this to be spectacular, but we don't want to overdo it.
You know, you just, like, you always try to start from somewhere real. Like, we were watching movies like Rest Repo and things that were like real documentaries. And you try to start from an authentic place. And then as you're trying, as you go from there and you build on that, you want to add like something that puts you, you know, that's what cinema is so great at, is like, it can transport you deeper into something or show you a different version of something. So, yeah, I mean, obviously I love slow-mo, but I'm always like trying to do it in a way that extends or enunciates a moment that kind of puts you into the headspace of the character. You know, like if a sniper is doing something and there's little details, you kind of have to imagine a real sniper probably does have some level of like focus and just intensity in his brain that, you know, the only way to possibly show that to a certain degree to a non-sniper person would be to at least give them a different perspective visually of, you know, that moment, you know? So I'm always just trying to find a way to color action or exciting things in a way that feels like it really pushes it to a bigger level, you know?
Yeah, there's some spectacular scenes in the movie that like really bring the gravity of the situation. And what I'm really impressed by, like last year I saw The Covenant, Guy Ritchie's The Covenant. And that was like, you don't even realize you're holding your breath, but that takes place over, you know, number of months. This takes place over 48 hours. Almost every time, step of the way, I was just like, holy crap. So can you talk about deciding to do it in the framework of 48 hours and time constraints?
Yeah, just really, you know, you kind of look at the real operational situation. And so that really creates the time constraint, you know, like, I don't know if I set out specifically to do a certain amount of time. It was just more as you're naturally writing. And then, you know, of course, when you film certain things change and you're like, oh, well, this actually has to be this long. So sometimes you just naturally allow the time to take place over the time that it should be. So it's not necessarily a conscious decision like, oh, I want to make a 48 hour movie. It's more like, oh, the situation is a 48 hour movie. So there's a little bit of that, but at the same time, you know, the quicker a space of time is, like, there's something interesting to that, you know, to just really rocket ship through from start to finish, you know, like, obviously, I'm sort of addicted to that, I guess you could say. Like Underwater, we just begin the movie, you know, situationally, you're in it. So I'm a fan of like trying to just get to it, you know. I think the first cut I turned into the producers on this, they like hit me back and they're like, "Oh my God, we've never said this, but it's too short. You need to put some scenes back in." But my editor, he's such a like, he's kind of old school guy. He worked on like Con Air and Todd Miller. He's awesome. He worked on all the Transformers. He worked for Michael Bay for a long time. So we're very different sometimes how we see cinema, but he loves to go too. So you put two of us together and like we're gonna cut real fast and hard. And then we ended up, yeah, like I said, we put some scenes back in because the producers were like, "It's too fast. You guys just cranked it, you know?" So, but yeah, it's fun to do that, I think.
Well, is there a line, you know, there they talk about how war is hell, and you know, you've seen that story a million times, a guy all by himself and he's running out of resources. But I love how it was continually going towards a meat grinder. You know, it was like it's bad, now it's worse, and here's fire, and here's like explosions and stuff like that. So
Yeah.
did you have a level where you're like, well, like you said, you needed to put more in, but how difficult was it to sort of put patch things together or you know, extend the narrative?
I mean, you always kind of like have definitely when you're writing, you're like, all right, bad to worse to worse to worse. And but in order for like those moments to be power, it's like music, you know, you have to like give people room to breathe, give them safety, then take it away, give them safety, take it away. So there's always that line of like, there can't be too much, you know, so you really want to give some breathing room so that way there's contrast. I've always been a fan of like Miyazaki. He always like somebody was asking like how his films were like so powerful, and he said it's this, and he like held his hands out, and it's the space between the clap, you know, the ma. I think he calls it the ma, if I'm not mistaken, and that's it's more powerful than the clap, you know, like the sound of the clap is just a brief moment, but the anticipation of the clap is like what makes it strong. So I've always thought about that. I think it's, you know, the masters, Villeneuve is so good at that, you know, opening of Sicario, you find the people in the walls and you don't see them put in the walls, but you're like meditating on the fact that they were put into the walls. And that's more intense than seeing them being put into the walls. Just your own imagination of like, that's the ma, the like lead up to that must have been insane, you know? So that's always been powerful to me. And I, as a filmmaker, I hope to keep learning and creating more and trying to do it better, you know?
Sure. Well, I tell you, the scene that hit me the most was the CQB battle in the house where Milo and Liam are going hand to hand with the assailants. And it's just like there's a part where they flip over the counter and the camera follows them. So what was your favorite part or maybe even the toughest part that you're like, can't believe we got that, but now it's in the can.
Man, some of the night shoots with the helicopter, and the explosions happening behind the helicopter, and then we had another drone flying for that. Those were very difficult because those are big machines that, you know, on a limited, you know, we're not the biggest budget in the world, so you only have a few tries. Like getting, you know, an actor to find that spot or, you know, find the moment, like that's like work, and it's you know, you can kind of push really hard and manifest it. But if a helicopter's not in the right spot to do something, it's hard to convince the helicopter to move over a little bit or do that. And those were very, very difficult long nights, let's put it that way. And you just have to, there's so many, you want to be safe, you don't want anyone to get hurt, and you have monster explosions and things going on. That's always tricky, especially on a budget where you don't have the room to do it twice, you know. Those are always the hardest, but the most rewarding when they work, you know.
Well, this worked. I mean, I was like,
Thank
oh,
you.
holy crap, holy crap, every step of the way. So, William, thank you so much. Big fan of Underwater. Wanted to talk to
Thank
you
you
for
so
hours
much.
about the production design, but I have to wrap it up. So,
Yeah, thank
best
you.
of luck to you and talk to you soon.
Really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Cheers.
RPG 12 o'clock, incoming!
Weapons away.